Having a savvy financial mindset is so important for every OT practitioner and student. But it's one of those things that I feel like some people might not prioritize, or they just think that it should be left up to the professionals. And because of that, last month's question of the month was, what questions do you have about money? In order to help me answer these questions, I brought on Mindy Jensen from the Bigger Pockets Money podcast. In the episode, she answers money questions from the OT community and also shares her insight into why we as OT practitioners and students need to pay more attention to our money. And also, stay tuned to the very end of the episode to find out this month's new question of the month. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah Putt. I've been an occupational therapist since 2009, specializing in early intervention and also run my own private practice in this setting. Welcome to OT for Life. Hey, Mindy, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm so excited to be here, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you. I have been wanting to get you on the show for a very long time now, so it is super fun that we are making it happen today. So today, we're going to be talking all about, I know, one of your favorite topics and subjects, money.
Occupational therapy. I do have to say that Sarah and her magic fingers cured my tennis elbow. Sarah was visiting me and I was having horrible, horrible pains in my elbow. And she took her fingers and she dug into my elbow. And everybody listening knows the spot. That hurt. She is a tiny little person, but boy, are her fingers strong. But as soon as she stopped like crushing my elbow, I had had pain for months and Sarah's magic OT fingers fixed me. So I have a very healthy appreciation for the OT profession. So thank you for having me. I would love to share my knowledge about money.
Yeah. Well, and I should say, I totally didn't pay you to give that little promo though. But I do remember being like, this is going to hurt, Mindy. Like, be prepared. This is going to hurt really bad, but I promise it's going to work.
Boy, were you right.
Yeah.
On both accounts, it hurt. I mean,
today we're going to dive all into money. And actually, this past month, every month I do like this special thing, and it's called the question of the month. And last month was, what questions does the OT community have about money? And so I knew that you were the perfect person to bring on and help me with this, because I know a little bit here and there, but I needed a really good, solid money guru to come on and really help me dive deep into these questions. But before we get to the questions from the community, I have a question for you that I want to start with. A lot of times when I start talking about money as an occupational therapist, people will kind of look at me and they're like, why are you talking about money and OT? Like, you should just stick to the OT. That's your training. That's what you know. And they just figure I really need to just stick to talking about occupational therapy. So I want to ask you this. Why do you think it's important for people, regardless of profession, age, background, etc., to have some basic knowledge about money, and especially when it comes to their own money?
I love this question because I know several occupational therapists and they all love their job, which is great. I have had jobs that I hated and they really just suck the soul right out of you. So having a job that you love is fantastic, but will you always love that job? And I have had people say to me, oh, I don't care about financial independence. I don't care about, you know, saving for the future. I love my job. I'm always going to work. Well, what happens when you get a new boss and your new boss goes by the name of Satan or March? That was my boss who was not my favorite. My sister is a teacher. She would always be like, whatever, I love being a teacher. I'm not going to worry about my finances. But she was contributing to her 403B. And then her principal retired and she got a new principal who went by the name of Dr. Satan. And she's like, oh, now I understand what you mean. So my whole thing is financial independence. And once you have reached financial independence, you can do whatever you want. And that means you can still work if you want to. I have reached financial independence and I still work because I choose to. I don't even have young kids anymore. I have medium kids now. They're 11 and 14. They're in school 35 hours a week. So I need something to do with my time for 35 hours a week. I found a job that I love. Oh my God, do I love my job? I get
you really
to
love
work
your job?
There. And it, I really do. I know you've never heard me say that before every single time I talk about it, but I really do love my job. And if it gets to the point that I don't like it anymore, I can leave. I'm not beholden to my job because I have already figured out my finances. And when you are an occupational therapist and you run your own business and you have your own successful podcast, you can do whatever you want and choose to continue to work for yourself. But if you're working for, let's say, a hospital, I've heard that sometimes hospital administration is trying to save every buck they can. When you're working for Dr. Satan, it's really, really easy to want to leave. And it's really hard to leave when you need the money to pay your bills and pay your rent and put food on the table. So when you get your finances in order, you kind of are the master of your universe and the master of your domain, and you can make the decisions. And maybe that means going out on your own because you're sick of the hospital administration. Once money's taken care of, you can lead the life that you want to lead.
And I think listening between the lines of what you're saying right now, it's really speaking to the people that potentially could get trapped, quote unquote, trapped because of money or because of a lack thereof, where they end up being in a job that they despise for whatever reason, whether it's management, productivity, maybe even just the role that they have to be doing. And then all of a sudden it's like they can't leave because they can't afford to leave. And that, to me, listening to you, everything that you're saying right now, that's the important part. It's having the money part figured out. So if something changes and you don't want to be in your that specific job anymore, you're not trapped and you're not forced to be there.
Exactly.
So for somebody who, because we have a lot of new practitioners, and actually we have a lot of students that will listen to this podcast as well. So for somebody that is just starting their career as an occupational therapy practitioner, or for somebody that is just starting to pay attention to their money, what do you think is like the number one thing, or maybe the top three things that they need to focus on first?
Ooh, my most recommended thing to do when you're first starting to figure out your finances is to track your spending. If you don't know where your money is going, it is going to fly out of your pocket because it's just a dollar. It's just $5. It's just $10. I'm making $40, $50, $80, $100,000 a year. I can afford $5. You don't think about it. But $5 and $5 adds up. And all of a sudden, at the end of the month, you've saved nothing. Or maybe you've put a little bit into your 401k. Or maybe you haven't. Or maybe you've spent even more than you have, because next month I'll get a check and I'll be golden again. But tracking your spending, it is shocking to see where your money is going the first time you track your spending. My husband and I were living in a new area. I didn't know anybody. And I would go to the gym every morning. To get to the gym, I had to drive past the grocery store. And I would just, oh, I need that one thing. I would stop in the grocery store and I would pick up that one thing and like six other things. And it's not a lot of money that you're spending that one day. But then the next day I'd go to the gym and hit the grocery store on the way home. And the next day and the next day and the next day. And he said to me, after like a month or two of living there, he's like, we're spending an awful lot of money. We should start tracking our spending. So we got a notebook. I mean, tracking your spending does not have to be difficult at all. We got a notebook and put it on the kitchen counter. So right when I walked in the door, I would see it and write down everything that I spent. Date, store, how much I spent, and a rough idea of what it was. And like 15 days into the month, the whole page is filled up. And I'm like, what are we doing? Grocery store, grocery store, grocery store. Why am I going to the grocery store every single day? This is ridiculous. I was able to make a change like before the first month was out, just by simply seeing it written down in black and white. So if you are looking to get your finances in order, know where your money's going. And then what are your goals? Does your spending align with your goals? You know, do you want to go to the grocery store every single day? Do you maybe want to do more charitable giving, but at the end of the month, there's nothing left to do charitable giving with? Do you want to save for retirement? Start with where your money's going and then start with where you want your money to go. Do I need to spend $1,000 a month on groceries for a family of four? No. So I should stop spending $1,000 a month on groceries for a family of four. So let's see, track your spending. And then the next thing is make a loose budget. And budget is, you know, the B word. Everybody hates the word budget. It doesn't have to be restrictive. If you're currently spending $1,000 a month on groceries, don't make next month's budget to be $250 for groceries, unless you already have all the things and there was some giant sale and now you're stocked up on meat and frozen vegetables for a month. But your first budget, you're going to ruin. You are going to be terrible at it, and that's okay. And also, track your spending without judgment. But if you see something, you're like, ooh, I don't really want to spend that much money on there, then stop spending that much money on there, like during the first month. But at the beginning of the next month, go back and see what you spent in every category: gasoline, utilities, groceries, clothing, phones, insurance, everything. And then make a budget based on that. Try to tweak it a little bit. Wow, I spent every dollar. So let's cut back on going out to eat, or let's cut back on groceries. You can't cut back on going out to eat and groceries because food's got to come from somewhere. But you can cut back a little bit and you can, you know, shop your pantry first, and you can decide that you're not going to buy any clothes this month, or combine errands so that you're not spending so much on gas because you're going all over the place when you could just do errands, you know, on one day. Just look at where your money's going and see where you can direct it a little bit better. Dave Ramsey has a budgeting app called Every Dollar. And the mantra is you need to give every dollar a name and a job, or it will go out and find its own job and it will just fly out of your pockets. Wow. You asked for three. I would
keep
say.
Keep going.
Well, that's only two. Track your spending and budgeting. Look into your retirement options there. If you're working for a government entity, frequently you will have what's called a 403B plan instead of a 401k plan. For all intents and purposes, it's the same thing. A 401k and a 403B are basically the same thing. They just have different names. If you do have a 403B, you may also have access to a 457 plan. This is an amazing plan, because when you are working for the government entity, you can contribute to the 457 the same amount that you can contribute to the 403B. So it's actually an extra retirement account. The 457 plan contribution limits this year, I believe, are $19,500. Same with the, did I say 457? Same with the 403B and same with the 401K.
As of 2021, just in case anybody's catching this later.
Yes, yes. And they only go up not every year, but they only go up. So it's not like in 2 years, it'll be 19. But anyway, the 457 plan, when you contribute, you are reducing your taxable income. And then when you separate from service, you can withdraw money from your 457 plan without penalty. You will pay taxes on it, but you don't pay any penalties on it. Whereas with the 403B, if you do put money into it and then try to withdraw it before 59 and a half, you would pay taxes and a fee of, I believe, 10%, a penalty fee. So if you are listening to this and you have never contributed to a retirement account, look at what your company offers and see what your options are. There are two different kinds of plans. There's the traditional plan and the Roth option. The Roth option, you are paying taxes now, and it grows tax-free when you withdraw it down the road. It is, you just pay no taxes on it. That is good if you think that your taxable income will go up over the course of your years. It's also a Roth option, I think, is a really good option. If you're young, you want to put that money in and let it grow tax-free for as long as possible. I'm sure people have heard of the Roth IRA. That is available to anybody who is single, making less than $139,000 a year, or married, making $206,000 or less, which is kind of a penalty for the married people, unfortunately. But if you are making that much money, yay for you. If you are able to contribute to a Roth IRA, I would strongly suggest doing so, because that is also, it grows tax-free. You can withdraw the principal of a Roth IRA for major life events like medical bills or paying for college or to buy a house, or you can just let it ride and let it grow and grow and grow. Another account I would look into is the HSA. The HSA comes with the high deductible insurance plan. So if you don't have a high deductible insurance option, the HSA is not an option for you. If you have a chronic condition, the high deductible plan may not be the best choice for you. That's something that you're going to have to consider yourself. But if the high deductible plan is an option, max out your HSA as much as you can, because that also grows tax-free. That's like the golden goose of retirement accounts, because you can contribute. It reduces your taxable income, so you contribute pre-tax money to it. It grows because you can invest that account. It grows until you are 59 and a half, and then you can take it out for, I think you can take it out just for living expenses, but you can always take it out for medical expenses. However, if you can cash flow your medical expenses, that's even better, because you save your receipts, and then down the road, after the account has grown for a long time, then you can cash in these $3 for Band-Aids and $8 for saline solution. And there's a lot of things that are medical expenses that you can cash in the HSA money for. But if you can cash flow them now, then you can just let that money grow. So track your spending, get yourself on a budget, and invest in your retirement accounts. There's a lot of them to choose from.
And I'm really glad. I mean, everything that you said right there, I'm just like, yep, the whole time, just like nodding my head. Yes, like everything is so important, because A, if you don't know where your money is going, you have no idea really what control you can kind of have over your money throughout the month, the week, the years, everything like that. And I'm glad you brought up like budget. A lot of times people say, you know, budget's a four-letter word. It's one of those bad words that we don't want to talk about, even though it's not four letters, it's six. But, you know, I think a lot of people feel budget is super confining. And I like that you said that, like, just have a loose budget. It's perfectly fine. And just play with it and see what you can cut. You can cut a lot. And then all of a sudden, if you feel like you need to spend a little bit more, go back to spending a little bit more. But you need to kind of figure out what it is that you can cut to then be able to kind of move forward to align with those goals and everything that you really kind of put forward. And then I'm really glad that you brought up the retirement options, because I feel like that's one thing that I hear time and time again within the OT profession, is that a lot of people are not contributing to their retirement accounts. They might not know what is out there. They might not even know that it's accessible or it's something that's a part of their benefit package. So if anybody's listening to this right now and you are not, or don't think that you're contributing to your retirement accounts, that's going to be like one of the first things that I want you to go look into right now. What does your company, what does your organization offer? And really look into those options, because I think it can be super beneficial. And if your company isn't offering it, ask them. Ask them if they would they consider doing a 401k or anything like that? Like, they might not be able to do it, but I think it's really worth the question and really worth that kind of time to invest to see what's out there. Because I think that that is one of the vehicles that can be very, very important in tracking your money and investing your money and really kind of getting a good handle on your money moving forward.
I'm glad you said that. Yes, absolutely. Talk to HR and ask for the benefits package again. Hey, can I see what that is? Read through it. And yeah, it's confusing. If this isn't your thing, if you're not just completely obsessed with all of these retirement plans, you're going to have a lot of questions. But ask your HR rep. Another thing to ask is, does the company offer a match? And that is the retirement plan match. It's typically a 401k or 403b. My company offers a match. It's a safe harbor match. And it is, they do it if I contribute to the 401k or not. They want you to contribute to the 401k. They want you to have money in the 401k. So they contribute for you anyway. So, and I max out my 401k every year. But if your company doesn't offer a retirement plan, maybe it's time to look for a new company, because this could be a significant portion of money that you're basically leaving on the table that somebody else is either going to pick up or ignore because they don't know about it either. But I've heard of companies that match like 4 or 6%. That's huge. I would love to have 4 or 6%. I would love for everybody listening to have 4 or 6% in their 401k. But they, a match means that they will match what you put in up to whatever the limit is. That is a 100% return on your investment instantly just by contributing to your 401k. There is no investment vehicle out there that offers a 100%, and it's a guaranteed 100%. Your company is, when they match it, they're putting in $1 for every dollar that you put in up to a certain amount. That's free money that you are not taking advantage of. So there we go. That's our next step, is to review all of the retirement options available. And if there are no retirement options available, unless it's like the best job you've ever had, maybe start looking. And when somebody offers you a job, ask them for the retirement benefits package and read through it. See what the health insurance plans are. See what the retirement plans are. See if they offer a Roth option. There are lots of different ways to just suck away a lot of money for retirement, but you have to know what you're looking at.
So I got a question. I got a question from the OT community here. And I love everything that we've talked about so far. But Mindy, do you have any ideas for alternate sources of income for OT practitioners? And also, I'm going to kind of throw in there, maybe it's other ways that they can make money or make their money work for them.
Oh, yes. Where are you living? Who is living with you? There is this concept that we have called house hacking, where you hack your housing to live for free or for very little. And what that means is you buy a property that is too big for you. It has more bedrooms than you need, or it is a multifamily property like a duplex, two houses kind of stuck together, or a triplex or a fourplex. Let's say you're living in a place that has four units, you're renting out three other units. Chances are really good that the rent you're getting from those three units will at least cover your mortgage and most likely cover your mortgage, your taxes, your insurance, your utilities, and put money in your bank account on top of that. You have just removed the largest expense that you have, which is your housing, either eliminated it or severely reduced it. Like, there's ways to reduce your expenses by just thinking outside the box.
Yes. Okay. So I have like so many questions that I want to get through. So these are just going to kind of be like rapid fire from here on out.
I will stop making such long answers.
I love it, but I'm just like, oh, there's so many more that I have to get through. So I received a fabulous voicemail from one of my listeners, Lauren Burns. So let's hear what she has to say.
Hey, Sarah, this is Lauren from Burns Lauren OT. I have been thinking about this question a lot this month. I think I have a lot of more questions related to money. So I'm really excited for this episode, but I feel like I've been seeing more people talking about investment in some way. And I was just wondering, any tips on what investment looks like? What is a good strategy to go by? Is there a certain investment strategy you should use? What's the benefit of investing as someone who is still paying off student loan debt and kind of first time in a full-time OT career? So I think that covers it. So thank you so much for doing this episode, and I can't wait to hear all about it.
Okay. So the personal finance community has rallied around index funds. An index fund is basically all of the companies that make up an index, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, all of these indexes, every company that's listed on that index is in an index fund. So you basically own a little bit of every single company. When the market goes up, the index fund goes up. When the market goes down, the index fund goes down. But a rising tide lifts all ships. You're not going to be able to predict that this stock is going to go up. Maybe you pick a stock that goes up, but it could also go down. If all of your money is in one stock, everything rides on that one stock. But when all of your money is in an index fund, everything rides on the American economy, basically. And all of my answers are going to be tailored towards the American economy. So I would say if you're looking to start investing, invest in index funds. And you can open up an index fund account with Vanguard or with Fidelity. If you don't have anything, I would choose Fidelity over Vanguard just because I think that Fidelity has better customer service. They're the same. The difference between them is negligible when it comes to fees and that sort of thing. But the difference with customer service is enormous. So Fidelity, go online, create an account, and buy the index fund. So in the personal finance space, VTSAX is like the pinnacle. Everybody invests in VTSAX. Like, that's the thing that everybody invests in. So if you're going through Fidelity, you are going to choose FSKAX or FZROX. Those are the Fidelity equivalents for mutual funds and for ETFs. It just depends on which one you're interested in.
And I'm sorry, for anybody that doesn't know, can you explain ETFs?
It's exchange traded funds. And do you know who really explained it so well is Mama's Talk Money, Chelsea Brennan. She was on our show and she was like, oh, here it is. Blah, 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 blah. And she really had a great explanation for it. It's like an index fund, but it's sold on the stock exchange. So it's traded like a stock.
I'm just going to link to that episode. So if people want more information about what they are, we'll link to it.
That is a great idea. And her episode is 145 of the Bigger Pockets Money podcast.
Thank you. Okay.
Oh, investing with student loans. Yes. Craig said it so well. He's episode 35 of the Bigger Pockets Money podcast. Craig had $80,000 in student loan debt. And he said, I want to house hack. And I know that I can generate a lot of income if I house hack. But if I wait to pay off my student loans, I could lose out on some great houses. So he tells his story better than I do. And his story was, I think we released it in 2018. So it's gone through some changes since then. But he's just generating a ton of cash based on his investments that he made instead of paying off his student loans. I think if you've got a lot of student loans, there's the student loan forgiveness plan. So we actually spoke with Sammy last week. And I said, oh, Sammy is a PA in the Bay Area. And she's 6 years into her 10-year student loan forgiveness plan payoff. So I reached out to Travis Hornsby from Student Loan Planner. I said, do you have any information about this? Because I know that it exists. And talking to Sammy, I learned that you have to qualify. You can't just work there for 10 years and say, hey, forgive my loans. You have to work, I think it's 30 hours a week. You have to make payments every month. Some of them are income-based payments. Some of them are minimum payments. So you really need to do your research. However, she has $160,000 in student loans.
And that's very common for OT practitioners as well. And yeah, students that are coming out into the field.
If you have the opportunity to have that kind of debt wiped away, if you work for 10 years and, you know, do 30 hours a week and make your minimum payments, like look into those repayment programs, because that is enormous to be able to have that kind of debt lifted off of your shoulders. So I reached out to Travis and Travis gave me an article. So I will forward that to you and you can link to that in the show notes.
Perfect. But I think like bottom line to this question, Mindy, is should you consider investing when you have student loan debt? Yes or no?
Yes, you should, because time in the market is so valuable and you can't get that time back. I tell this story. If anybody's listening and they've listened to my show, they've already heard this story before. But I read something when I was like 20. It said, if you invest $100 a month, every month, from the time you're 22 to the time you're 30, and then you never invest another dollar. When you are 65, you will have more money from those 8 years of investing than you will if you invest $200 a month every month from the time you're 30 till the time you're 65. Those 8 years, because of the power of compound interest, will give you more money at the end of 65 than if you invested for 35 solid years, twice as much as you were investing. That is such a powerful statistic. And I hope that everybody listening, if they only listen to that one thing, start investing now. And if you're already 30, okay, you can't go back in time. And if you can, hook me up because I need to go back in time and do some more investing. But you can't go back in time. So start investing now. And yes, you have student loan debts and you have mortgage payments and you have all these things. You don't have to invest $1,000. You can invest $5. You can invest just a little bit. Start off and invest consistently. That is the best way to grow your wealth. And until we talked to Craig on episode 35, I was firmly in the camp that you should pay off your debts before you start investing. Now, I say pay off your debts. If you have a 27% interest rate on a credit card, you should absolutely pay that off before you start investing. But most student loans are 3 to 6, 7, 8%. So you should start investing while you're paying off your student loans. High interest credit card, yes, pay that off and then start investing.
So in talking about student loan debt and kind of outside of the student loan forgiveness plan that we've been talking about a little bit, do you have any tips for people to be able to tackle their student loan debt, either while they're still in school or after school?
So there's two different kinds of loans. There's subsidized and unsubsidized. Subsidized means that you don't start accruing interest until after you have graduated. And maybe it's 6 months after you've graduated, but subsidized starts accruing interest from day one. So if you need to take out student loans, put the most on subsidized loans instead of unsubsidized loans. When you graduate, look at refinancing that debt. Have great credit so you can get a great interest rate, but see if you can refinance that debt. SoFi, SoFi.com. does refinancing of student loan debt. If you've got an 8% rate and you can refinance to 3 or 4%, that's just way better. You're going to pay a lot less interest when you are paying back the loan. Right now, you don't have to make payments on your student loans. They are 0% interest right now through September. I think it was through last September, and then they extended it through September of this year, which means either you don't have to make any payments because you don't have a job, or if you still have a job, you should be throwing every dollar at these payments because everything you're paying right now is going towards the principal instead of paying interest as well. So if you have student loans and right now is the best time to go out and get a second job just to throw all the money you can at those student loans, especially if you have high student loans and you're not part of a forgiveness plan. But go in and see if you can qualify for a forgiveness plan. Sarah is going to have a link to an article on Student Loan Planner in the show notes. And that's a really great one from Travis Hornsby, who's kind of the student loan payoff master. And he does specialize in higher student loan debt. His wife is a physician. So, you know, some of those six-figure student loan debts.
Yeah, that we can all relate to in the OT profession over here. Okay, so I got another voicemail, and this voicemail came from Cassie. So let's listen in and see what her money question is.
Hi, Sarah. This is Cassie from OT.Cass on Instagram. My money question this month was, as a new grad, how do you prepare to negotiate your first salary? I would love to hear your insight and advice. Thank you.
Okay, so negotiating salary, first you have to know what the salary is, what the job is that you're looking at in that area. What is it paying? When you are graduating, you need to do research into what your position is paying. And it'll say, you know, when you do the research online, it will say this pay is for new grads. This pay is for people with 3 to 5 years experience. Know what the salary is paying. And then when you go in and they ask you what you want, aim a little bit high. If the going rate is 35 to 40, aim for 40. Because then if they offer you 36, yay, that's better than 35. Don't sell yourself short. I think that I deserve $40,000. I've done research. This position pays between $35,000 and $40,000, but I was a straight A student all throughout school and I did all of my clinicals. I have recommendation letters from all the people that I've worked with. I am prepared. And you have to do a little bit of research ahead of time. You can't just be like, well, I graduated. Who's going to hire me? Also, apply for any job that sounds interesting. They won't call you up and say, hey, are you looking for a job? If they don't feel that you're qualified, they won't call you. But if they do feel that you're qualified, they'll give you a call. But be prepared. Jump in with both feet. And if you're in school right now, start asking your favorite teachers, hey, would you give me a letter of recommendation? Those go really, really far. You don't have work experience, so you need school experience and people who are familiar with how you do your OT thing and will write a good recommendation letter. Also, if you ask for a recommendation letter and they don't give you a great one, don't use that. You don't have to show everybody all your recommendation letters. When you have been in the field for a while and you want a raise, why do you deserve it? You need to go in prepared. And again, you do your research. I've worked here for 3 years. Somebody new in the field is making 40, but 3 to 5 years experience is making 60. Why do you deserve a raise? What are the things that you have been doing that make you eligible for this raise? And write them down. You don't just walk into your boss's office and say, hey, I want more money. You walk into your boss's office with a sheet prepared. These are the reasons that I deserve a raise. I've taken on more overtime. I've taken the difficult clients. I cover people's shifts when they call off. Whatever it is that you are doing, your clients love you. You're all the things. But when you are going in asking somebody for more money, you want to give them reasons to say yes. If you are always late to work, probably not going to be somebody saying, hey, let me give me you more money to not show up on time. Be a great employee. Toot your horn and keep track of the things that you're accomplishing. It's starting from day one. You start at the job, you have a client who says, wow, I feel great. You fixed my tennis elbow. Ask them to write you a letter or write it down. Hey, I fixed this person. She had been having a lot of problems and she came in and I've made her feel better. Keep a running list. And it doesn't have to be all the things, but anytime somebody gives you an email that says, hey, good job, or hey, I really appreciated this, put that, create a folder. I got this from Aaron Lowry. Create a folder in your email that is for praise and put every email that people praise you in there. Then print those out and share that with your boss. People sometimes have a hard time tooting their own horn. This is the time when you are asking for a raise is the time to toot loudly.
Especially in your boss's office.
Especially in your boss's office.
I think one of the big things that I think my husband actually did this, and I was like, this is a great idea, especially if you're going in. And I would say this is probably, well, now I was going to say it's for people that are already working there, but this is going to go both ways. If you are going in as a new employee, or if you're going in as an established employee and the boss or the company hesitates when they're like, wait, you want more money? I don't know. Like, and you can sense that they're like not really super open to giving you more money, but you can always say, let's do a trial period. Let's set some goals for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. And if I reach those goals, you give me a raise or you increase my pay or you, whatever it is that you are negotiating for. So then it's on you to show up, meet those goals and be like, look what I did. And as long as the company approved that in the beginning, if you show up and do your work, you're going to prove to them that you are there to do your job. So that's kind of a little tidbit that my husband did once. And I was like, that's brilliant. Because in the beginning, the company is like, I don't want to give you the money. But then if you meet your goals, it's like, all right, well, you did it. So here we go. Yeah, let's increase your pay or let's increase PTO or whatever it is that you were really trying to negotiate for.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily have to be salary. You can negotiate working a half day on Friday or having all of Friday off and still getting the same pay. You can negotiate extra vacation time. There's a lot of things you can negotiate that isn't technically more money coming out of the company's pocket when they're starting to be hesitant. Also, again, when you're asking for a raise, aim high. If you're looking for, you know, if you want 77, ask for 80 and see what they say, or ask for 82 and see what they say. And if they give it to you, hot dog. And if not, then chances are good that if you are a good employee and you are performing the work and you are proving that you deserve the raise, they will want to keep you. They will try to keep you, and they will, if they can't do 82, maybe they can do 80. You are going to be happy with 77. So now it's even better. When you ask for a raise and say, hey, can I have 75? And they're like, sure. You can't go back and say, well, can I have 77?
Yeah. And I think that's very difficult for a lot of people in the OT profession, because we know what we're worth, but then we always kind of have this like imposter syndrome or self-doubt that like, oh, if I ask for too much, I might get fired, or I'm going to make my boss unhappy or anything like that. And so I love that you said that, like aim high, because the company, if they give you that high number, fantastic. Most likely they're going to go down a little bit, but at least you're higher than where you would have if you would have just started at that lower kind of salary price point.
Yep. And if your company fires you for wanting a raise, they're not worth working for.
Hands down. So, okay, switching gears, like these questions are kind of all over the place here, but I did also get a bunch of questions all related to kind of business funding and like starting a business and tips for kind of managing money as you're thinking about starting a business and all of that. So do you have any insight to share about finances in regards to starting a business?
You need to be well funded. You need to have a very large reserve fund for the unexpected. When you're starting a business, your clients should not be making sure the business continues to run. Of course, you need to have clients to make sure the business runs, but your clients that paid you 2 or 3 months ago should be funding your plans now. And if you don't have a large fund, what happens if you break your appendix and have to have your appendix out? And then you can't see clients for 3 weeks. What happens if you get pregnant? How are you going to run your business when you aren't there because you're taking maternity leave? I'm not looking exactly at you, Sarah, but I'm looking directly at you. You have a reserve fund. So it's okay if you don't generate any income for a little while. Having an employee is great, but if you don't have the work to come in to give that employee, how are they going to, you still have to pay them. How are you going to pay them with no money? You need a good reserve fund. I don't have a ton of tips about business, but do your research. Is there a need for what you're providing? Is there a need in that area? Is there a need in the next city over that's greater? Is there the demand? Are you going to be able to generate 40 hours of work every week or 32 or 12 or whatever it is you're looking for? And how are you going to generate that work? Who is referring to you? You know, look for ways to generate income. But if you have no income, maybe you start off while you're still working. Start a little side business and see how that works. And when it gets so big that you can't do it and your day job, then you leave your day job. But this is just another reason that you need to have your finances in order. It's because you want to be able to do what you want to do. And if running your own business is what makes your heart sing, figure out your finances in advance so you can do that.
I feel like the entire episode now has just completely come full circle from where we started, what you started saying, and now to kind of what we're ending on here. And there has been so much good information in this episode already. But do you have any last words, any last thoughts about money that you wish to share?
Fixing your finances doesn't have to be an all or nothing thing. You don't have to get rid of everything that causes you joy just so you can have money in the bank. When you're not having fun, what's the point? We talked to Liz from the Frugal Woods, and she said that when she first discovered financial independence, she cut out everything. She loves seltzer water and yoga, and they had cable TV and, you know, all these things, and they cut out everything. They had their mortgage, they had food, they had utilities. And when they got rid of everything, they discovered, I really want to have seltzer water back. But I was buying 2-liter bottles and drinking those. So I bought a Soda Stream, and that's cheaper. And then I rigged the back of the Soda Stream up to a gas canister instead of those little Soda Stream canisters because that was cheaper. And then I noticed that when I got the new gas canister, it said Bob's Welding Supply on it. So I called up Bob and he's like, yeah, it's half the price of what you're getting it at the beer store for. So then that was cheaper. So she's constantly looking for ways to game the system to pay less. She wanted to add in bubble water and she wanted to add in yoga, but yoga was $20 a class. So she went to the yoga studio and said, how can I get this less? And they said, hey, if you want to work the front desk, you can have the class for free. Now she spends 20 minutes at the front desk beforehand, checking everybody in and gets to take a free yoga class. There's ways to cut your expenses so that you're still able to do all the things you love. But when you cut everything out and you discover, I don't really miss some of these things, it can be really enlightening. And then when you really get into it, it's like a game. I have a spending tracker that I put on my phone. It's a mobile spending tracker. And now it's a game to see how little I can spend every month. And I'm not restricted by income. I'm not restricted by my husband. I am restricted by myself. I'm like, oh, do I really need this? Because it's almost at the end of the month and I've only spent $495 on groceries. So can I make it to the end without spending $500 on groceries? That, like, it's just fun. And it's a different way to look at things.
And I think that the big thing is you're not saying like, I'm not just going to do it, but like, hey, I might still want to do this, but how can I actually make it cheaper where I'm not spending full price or over full price, but I can still get whatever the sacred cow is, whatever the item is that you really want to have. You can still have that, just not be paying, you know, the full ticket item for it, something like that.
Yeah. I like good beer. I'm not going to buy cheap beer to save a buck. But I don't care about my clothes. So I shop at the thrift store and nobody has ever looked at me and said, wow, what a fashion icon. And that's okay because it doesn't matter to me. If you really like fashion, but you don't care about beer, then, you know, your money is going to be spent differently than mine. Just because I don't spend money on it doesn't mean that you can't value it. It just means that I don't. So you save money on things that don't matter so you can spend on things that do. Because again, if you're just living a life of deprivation, it's not that fun.
Definitely not. All right. Well, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about money, learn more about real estate, how can they connect with you?
I am all over biggerpockets.com and on social media at Mindy at BP. That's MindyATBP for Bigger Pockets. And I have a podcast, Bigger Pockets Money, and you can find that wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. So I have just one last question for you today, Mindy. And typically when I'm talking to other OT practitioners or students, I ask them for one word to describe occupational therapy. Now, being that you're not an OT practitioner, I'm going to switch it up a little bit here. And I want to know, in one word, what does money mean to your life?
Freedom.
I knew you were going to say that.
Money means freedom. The freedom to live the life that I want. And right now I am living the life that I want.
Well, thank you, Mindy. This has been an awesome chat full of information. I feel like I even need to go back and listen and be like, okay, hold on. I got to take some notes on this because even some of the stuff you were talking about, I'm not super well versed in quite yet. But thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're super, super busy. You got a lot of stuff going on, but this was fantastic. And it was great to catch up and talk about money.
I'm so honored that you had me on your show.
Hey, Sarah here for a quick message before you go. I hope you found this episode helpful in answering your questions about money and why it's so important for us to think about. Big thanks to Mindy for coming on the show and sharing such wonderful insight and information with the OT community. I know you are all probably wondering what next month's question of the month is. So without further ado, next month's question of the month is, what is your OT elevator pitch? Being that it's OT month in the States, and I feel like many people still struggle to define occupational therapy appropriately, I want to hear what you have to say when you're asked to give a quick and dirty explanation of OT. To answer this question, head on over to otforlife.com/question of the month and leave me a voicemail. You have 90 seconds to share your response, and also make sure that you include your name and where you're coming from in your voicemail. All submissions will be featured on an upcoming episode of the OT for Life podcast. So let's do our part to promote our amazing profession and advocate for who we are and what we do as occupational therapy practitioners to celebrate OT month. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. OT is for life. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, here are three easy ways you can help support the show. 1. Head over to otforlife.com to find out more about any resources discussed on the show. Remember, that's OT4LYFE.com. 2. Share the podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 3. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. And while you're there, be sure to leave a review saying how much you love the show. Thanks again. I'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
Being prepared is, what is that phrase? I screwed this up the other day too. The best defense is a good offense, or the best offense is a good defense. I can't remember. When you live in LA as an OT, is the going salary $20,000? You should set expectations as soon as you can. What is your, edit all that out. Let's start over.
Go for it. Take two.
Take two.
Beer? It's only 11 o'clock in the morning, Mindy.
You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. That's just bubble water. Uh-huh. Let's see. And what was the question? Paying off
student loan debt. You were saying SoFi, refinance, subsidized.
Yeah, you want to refinance and then twerk.
You want to twerk? Yes. Oh, where is this episode going?
I was saying work.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, oh, this is bubbly water suck. Is getting you twerking. Oh, hi, cat. I'm just staring at me. Like, what?
I don't really care if somebody wants to send me an email. That won't work, but it will. Math never lies. I think it's 1.5% or 3%. I didn't read it. Wow. Here's me saying read it.
Take your own advice. What's the word I'm looking for? This is pregnancy brain. Just deal with me here.
Have yourself. That's great English.
A merry little Christmas.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.